Blind Cool Tech 114, September 1705. Hey y'all, how are you? I'm Larry Skutkan, your host for this edition of Blind Cool Tech.
What is Blind Cool Tech, dude?
Is it a punk band?
It's Feedback Day, where we provide listener feedback, and we need to do this from time to time to prevent getting too much of a buildup. I have eliminated emails that don't really convey any information and just represent compliments to the show. And believe me, I do appreciate the compliments. So don't hesitate to send a message whether you like or don't like the show. Just don't want to play them for the rest of the users or listeners, I should say, because they get a little bit repetitive, and we're trying to focus on providing information that you may send in that we can share with the rest of the listeners. Just got back from... Oh, I need to cut this back just a tad bit here. Just got back from Dallas last night. Had a really good trip. You can see yesterday we posted a couple of sound-seeing tours and an interview with Skip Stahl and Chuck Hitchcock from Cast, and had meetings Thursday and Friday, very intense ones. I must say these folks at Cast have put together a team of people to work on this initiative that is very, very high caliber. Very, very sharp people, very dedicated people. So I would personally say that this initiative is in very good hands. There's no hidden agendas anywhere. Everyone really cares about what's going on from many, many perspectives. And it's quite exciting to see this kind of initiative going on. I'll be talking more about NIMAS, and we'll actually be interviewing Julia Myers, who's heading up the process of setting up NIMAC, which is the distribution center for these files over at APH at some point. And maybe on one of the walks next week in the morning, which I really missed Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. In fact, I thought about taking a nice long walk this morning. Somehow there's something about sitting in a meeting all day that is a bit tiring. But anyway, I'll be talking more about that in one of the shows next week, and giving you some inside perspective and my personal take, for whatever that's worth. Let's go ahead and get right into the email.
Hi Larry, thanks for responding to my feedback. Actually, Uber 2000, the name of the audio player I described the other day, is spelled FOOBR2000. Also, to prevent confusion, I should mention that my name is Matt Campbell, in case any listeners are thinking that it's Matt Bottom. It would be nice if the TTS would speak Bottom as a separate string, instead of running it together with the last line of text. Do you think that's a problem with Window Eyes or Neo Speech? That's all for now. Matt Campbell Bottom.
All right, now you have a middle name, Matt. Matt Campbell Bottom. Now, we actually had a pretty funny comment about that. You're not the only one that took it that way. And it's not the text-to-speech. As you can see, I'm not even using Neo Voice this time. It's apparently something to do with Window Eyes. I always hate to introduce pauses where they don't need to be, but I would actually kind of prefer not to even have that message, but I don't personally know of a way to turn it off, and I'll be the first to admit I'm no total expert in all the nuances of Window Eyes. I did correct, I had spelled it FUBAR. I went ahead and put a link to that website for that player. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet. I went ahead and put a link to it in those in the notes for that particular show. So thank you for the feedback, Matt.
Hi, Larry. Love your Blind Cool Tech podcasts a bunch. Very informative, and you are one smart person. Keep up the super work you do. My name is Pedro, and I am in Atlanta. I decided to give Google Talk a try today. I know it is in beta form at the moment. So far it can be managed via the mouse cursor. I have JAWS 6.0 WinXP Home SP2 Norton AV2005, and is updated both automatically with the definitions, and I also do manual updates for the live updates too. I have DSL here. Any chance we can test the Google Talk with me? If you can, not that is fine too. My mail address is patrojagmail.com. Link, send me an email reply to patrojayahoo.com link telling me when you want to talk for a few minutes. I already use Skype here with the scripts, but Ebay bought them today, so who knows how the Skype software will be like in a year's time. Google Talk is my backup talk phone software for now. One thing about Google Talk is the software is automatically updated for you, which could spell trouble for us blind users as the software will become more inaccessible. Wish I could decide when I want to install the update or not. It should be a manual. Option. Petro bottom.
Well, that's some good points, Petro. Gosh, I hadn't even got Google Talk installed on this machine. I have it at work. I wonder if we might have some interest from some of the listeners in helping you test that out a little bit. I don't know when I would have time to, actually. I'm not actually even sure I'm crazy about going with Google Talk, partially for some of the reasons that you mentioned there. It's just, you know, I tried it at work, and it's not worth the trouble of mousing around to try to figure out how to use it. You know, my ideal interface for something like this would be when you got a call for a little SysTray notification to post itself, maybe provide you a little sound, and then there would be some universal hotkey to answer the phone. That's actually the way the voice over IP telephone we have at work works when you're using the software. Scott, I hadn't forgot about you. I had uninstalled that software and was just using the hard phone because I was having such, two or three crashes a day, and I do a lot of work on the phone, and it was really starting to get annoying. But since then, I think they've made a few upgrades, and I was willing to try it again. I really wasn't willing to give up my hard phone. I kind of wanted to have both. But the way it worked is that when you got a call, you know, the software announced who the caller was, and then you could hit Windows A to answer it from wherever you were. Now, what I absolutely, and I don't think Google does this, but what I absolutely cannot tolerate is for a program to intrude itself, you know, jerk the focus away from what you're doing to put a message up that you're getting a call. And I actually don't think Google does that, but calendar and GroupWise will do that. You can shut that off, so it's not that big a problem, but I can't stand it when something takes the focus away from me, and it's just not nice behavior.
Larry, I've been trying to send you a second submission today, but your FTP site, ftpbctschooler.onlinestorageasolution.com link seems to be down. Hopefully, it is temporary, so I will tell you about the file now. When I get through, you'll have it. This is a chat about solar cooking. It is DN Solar Cooking. WAV. It is recorded in 44kHz mono using a rather mediocre computer mic in the quietest place I could find. My office at work. It is just a bit under 18 minutes long. I won't be offended in any way if you choose not to use it. However, you really inspired me to start sharing the stuff that interests me because your podcast is so informal and so human. Jonathan used to ask me to submit, but I felt so unprofessional and was too intimidated to try. I love to write and do so clearly and with uniqueness. But when I speak, I sound like a ditzy know-nothing. It feels more relaxing to do my sharing on your podcast. You don't sound as well put together as Jonathan, but that is actually very reassuring. Some of the other things I'd enjoy chatting about include my own approach to square foot gardening, propagating plants from cuttings, the 8051 microcontroller and the open source support for it, controlling your PC with a car remote, using Windows Script Host as an amateur programmer, playing with ZipSlack on Windows XP, nifty little known tricks in Windows XP with Explorer, off the beaten path job search strategies that actually worked. For me, hacking the Tivo, my unusual FM transmitter setup, collecting vintage computers, FM radio cards for your PC, using clicker training with a guide dog, training shelter dogs, no-cost cures for doggy hotspots, and exploring the other kind of hotspots, the wireless kind using a GPS and the FreeNet Stumbler. As you can guess, my hobbies are homemaking, computers, and my pets.
Okay, that's from Debbie Norling, and we did get her, we've already posted her solar cooking demonstration, but I just wanted to read this email to you guys to show you some of the comments she had about feeling more comfortable about presenting on Blind Cool Tech and some of the myriad of topics she has in mind. So if you'd like to hear about some of those, please let us know, and I'm sure we could convince her to do some. She's a fascinating and very sharp lady, and I've always admired her writing, but I actually like the interactive, the multimedia approach of the audio as well, very much in fact. And Debbie, I don't think you sound ditzy at all. You sound quite intelligent to me.
Larry, I am new to listening to podcasts. I listened to a few of your podcasts and the interview you did with Jonathan Mosen. Have you done a review of the Olympus MP3 recorder you use? Is that the correct name and model? Is it still available for purchase? Listening to your walk home from work took me back to 1986, when I lived in Louisville and did my mobility training there with Barbara Merrick, and attended an evening computer class with Carla Franklin and you, and Fred dropped in a few times. The time goes so fast. I'll be listening. Kurt in Huntsville, Al-Bottom.
Okay, hi Kurt. I haven't actually done a review of the Olympus. I sort of went over it a little bit, but that's a good idea. I will do that. It turns out to be an excellent recorder for many, many aspects of podcasting and using it just to take notes. My main gripe with it is it just doesn't have enough memory. You know, you only get about an hour's worth of recording on its highest quality setting. I'm also not real, real crazy about the smaller size of the USB connection on it. It's kind of nice when you can just have one cable that you can use on your iRiver, your jukebox, your bookport, but then you got another one for the Olympus. So just little gripes, but I'm very, very impressed with that thing. And that one of the best things I like about it is when you hit the record button, you know you're recording. And the fact that it has a built-in speaker is also a big plus. You have to be careful, though. That built-in speaker really put us off at first. You know, we made a recording and played it back, and it sounded so tinny and just no good. But it was actually a very high-quality recording. It was just that the speaker is so small. But man, is it handy to have it there.
Message. Larry, I am very new and green to the whole podcasting thing. Oh, my questions might be a bit silly stupid, but bear with me, and hopefully you can help. I have Windows Media and Winamp 5.1 on my PC, and have been downloading and listening to your Blind Cool Tech podcasts, but how can I convert these files to MP3s for a media player, not an iPod or other item, but how can that be done? Also, is 2 sound cards required for recording a podcast, and with Podcatcher, can I record with that tool? Stephen A. Gara Assistive Tech.
Okay, Stephen, not stupid questions at all. I'm not quite sure what you mean about converting these files to MP3, because they should already be MP3 when you download them, or any way you get them, because that's the way we put them up there, as MP3 files. To answer your second question about needing 2 sound cards, no, you don't need 2 at all. 2 could be handy in some situations. I'm just using 1 sound card here and actually recording the computer as well. You can do that, or you can use the sound card without recording the computer interaction. I need to record it because it's reading this email to me. Your third question about the podcatching software recording, no, it doesn't actually do the recording. You just record with a regular audio recording program, GoldWave, WaveLab, WavePad, Studio Recorder, SoundForge, one of those kind of programs. I think what we'll probably do is actually do a tutorial about how to do a podcast here in the next few weeks. So kind of be looking for that for any of you who are interested. It's interesting because there's so many different ways you can do it, and I'll probably just present one or two of them, but there's a million ways to do it. Not stupid questions at all. Keep them coming.
Message. Hello, I am new to podcasting and have a few questions. In the podcatcher program, can I record from that? What will I need to make these podcasts available, and can they be easily turned into MP3 files? What is the best tool to record podcasts? Stephen A. Garrett.
Okay, Stephen. Yeah, I think I covered you just now on most of that. The thing that probably, you know, once you get the recording made and you convert it to MP3, there's a few tools to do that too. I think if you're using SoundForge or GoldWave, I'm not sure if WavePad does it, Studio Recorder does, there is an option to convert to MP3. As far as getting them up to a site, usually there's a couple ways to do it. The way I happen to be doing it is uploading it to a hosting site called ourmedia.org, which works in conjunction with archive.org, and they actually host and they store and host, and that's really important. I found out the hard way. I thought I was going to try to avoid excessive costs by keeping these files on a machine that I had access to that was connected directly to the internet and didn't have to pay, you know, by the megabyte or by the gigabyte as people downloaded it, but it quickly overwhelmed that machine. But with archive.org, you know, they have the facilities set up to kind of balance the load a little bit, and plenty of storage over there. So you get your files uploaded somewhere accessible on the internet, and then you create an RSS feed. And we probably need to talk about what's involved in an RSS feed. It essentially is an XML file with a channel element, and enclosed within the channel element are a series of items, and each of these items represents a show. And you know, you can actually look at one of these. In fact, you can look at mine. Just go to blindcooltech.com and, you know, point your browser to the link where the XML file is, but instead of hitting enter, right click and select save as, and that'll save that file, and then you can open it up into an editor and look at it, and you'll see that there's a title and a description, and then channel elements, or a channel element, and many item elements, and each of those item elements has the elements within it, like the title and the description and the enclosure. And the enclosure is the important one as far as a podcast goes, because that describes the URL of where the actual media file resides, the size of the file, and the kind of file that it is. So try taking a look at one of those. And the way you create those, there's a few different ways. I happen to be just using a script to create them, but there's tools on the internet that will actually create them automatically for you. So check that out, and we'll be talking more about details of actually creating a podcast.
I am attempting to upload CINGULAR.wav now. Got some kind of...
Okay, we'll skip that for the moment.
The submission singular.wav seems... Hi Larry, I've been very busy lately, and therefore have fallen behind on listening to your podcast Something Wonderful. Finally got to the Kentucky State Fair podcast you did a week or so back. Loved that roller coaster ride. I was right there with you and your daughter. BTW, for those who have not yet found it, set either Winamp, studio recorder or some such thing to 1 hour and 55 minutes. That was a rather small coaster, but then I grew up attending Euclid Beach Amusement Park in Ohio, the forerunner of the modern amusement park. Have also visited Joka Lake and Kings Island near Cincinnati. Now them's roller coasters of the first magnitude. In any event, haven't been on a coaster in probably 20 years until about 10 minutes ago. Do you want to be reimbursed for the ticket? G. Dick, Donna, Clayton.
No, no need to reimburse for the ticket. I got quite the adrenaline rush out of that myself, Dick. I'd like to try some of those other roller coasters, too. Got to figure out a better way to do both wind prevention in the microphones and automatic gain control, because between the wind and the screaming, I think most of the excitement of that ride is masked.
Hey Larry, this is either a new record, or you must be sick or too busy. Not burned out, I hope. Not almost 3 days without a new podcast. Wow, Alan Madison, Rio Rancho.
No, Alan, I was in Dallas. But I'm making up for it. I just put three of them up there last night. I had intended to actually do them from Dallas to post them. And I was prepared to pay my $10 a day for high-speed internet access, which, I have something against that, but I would have done it, but I went and left my database of the other shows here, so I actually would have had to code it up by hand and then come home and redo it. So, they're up there now, though.
Hey, Larry, I was just wondering who did the bad impersonation at the start of episode 109 user feedback, and how you got that piece of audio. That's all for now. Matt Campbell. Bottom.
That was a bad impersonation, wasn't it? That actually was Jeff Bishop doing that. It was on last week's Mosen Explosion, which is at Mosen, M-O-S-E-N, explosion.com. That was Jeff doing the first one, and then it was Jonathan doing the bland cool tech, or however he said it. So, Had a couple of impressions there. I'm glad they didn't sound too accurate. I really hope I don't sound that bad.
Well, look forward. Now, stick around, because we're going to be talking with Larry ScootCon shortly, and I know that you were the one who started this thread on the Blindcast list about the famous Clinton Library podcast. We're going to get the scoop on that from Larry shortly.
Yeah, good. That was, I tell you, I was pretty floored when I heard that. I thought, I thought he would go in there and go, okay, well, we'll be right back, you know.
That's not a bad Larry. Do that again. That wasn't a bad Larry impersonation.
That's all right.
Let me try. So it's like, it's blind cool tech. Yeah, it's blind cool tech.
Hello, this is Larry and Jake. I'm buying cool tech.
Yeah, you do that really well.
Yeah. I'll never be the same from doing that.
I mean, Larry's incredible. You know, he's such a. I hope he's not listening to this. He's such a nice guy.
He's such a nice guy,
and absolutely brilliant. And when you, I don't think that actually that many people quite appreciate the contribution he's made to this industry, especially through ASAP. But he's basically podcasting his life.
I don't know how he does anything else.
Yeah,
he has 102, and I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, it's just unbelievable to me. I mean, if you look at people like Don and Drew, who have 140 podcasts, and they've been podcasting for what now? Almost a year. Mm. And Larry has 102, and he's been doing it since May. The guy's just—it's awesome, actually. I mean, it's you never know what you're going to hear on Blind Cool Tech. You just have no clue, and that's half the fun. I mean, I actually look forward to finding out what he's going to do, and then what I tend to do is skim through, you know, his podcast, because frankly, it is sort of, you know, kind of, it is kind of boring listening to him walk to work, unless the topic is kind of interesting. You have no idea what he's going to do. You just really don't. He rode on a roller coaster, for God's sake, on one of his podcasts recently.
Yeah, I got a bit of wind in the mics, though.
Huh?
Got a bit of wind in the microphones.
Yeah, oh yeah, big time, didn't he? Yeah,
it's really hard not to do that when you're doing something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And he had a windscreen on it, too.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, you're going at such a speed with those roller coasters.
Hey, Larry. As to the email about msconfig, some programs, most notably antivirus software, will run checks to see if they are running on bootup and reinsert themselves back into the registry and msconfig, even after you disable them. So you have to figure out the offending programs and find whatever option there is to not start automatically when Windows boots. I had a nasty Trojan that did this as well, which took a spyware removal tool to get rid of, so that is another possibility. Hope this helps. J squared bottom.
Well, there you go, Dick. There's some good possibilities. I didn't think of it. I didn't realize that programs were doing that, but it shouldn't surprise me. So that's great. I'm glad we got some user feedback on an issue like that.
Hi, I loved that demo. Curtis and Karen were great. Would you consider doing demos of other accessible Verizon models, such as the LG VX4500? Is the 4650 the Verizon model with the most accessible features? Thanks for taking time to answer, and for all you do, your service is great. Beth Bottom.
Okay, hi Beth. Yeah, absolutely. We'd consider doing demos of any cell phone or any product that would be of interest to other people that might be listening to this show. So, yes, absolutely. I don't know the answer to your question about which is the most accessible, but we'll throw that out there for the listeners. This show has got some fantastic listeners that have begun to become very active participants, and I think that's going to make this show what people are after. You know, the exchange of information. So if any of you do know the answers to that, please either drop us an email or leave a comment on the line, and we'll pass that information on. I'll also provide information at the end of the show about how you can submit pieces if you want to review this cell phone or another one. So be listening for that.
Hi, my name is Liz Bodner. I came across a link to your podcast from an email, and I listened to the one on the review of the Verizon cell phone. When how to make a call was demonstrated on the review, before the call was connected, a spoken message of Verizon Wireless was heard. On the review, it was mentioned that this sound could be set in the menus, and it was detailed in the manual. I looked in the manual, and I'm not sure exactly where it would be. My phone is also the LG 4500 model, so I don't know if that would have anything to do with it. I wasn't sure if someone might be able to direct me either where to look in the manual to set this particular feature up, or give me directions as to where in the menus to do it myself. Thanks, take care, and good job on the podcasts. Liz Bottom.
Okay, Liz, I don't know the answer to that, but again, we'll throw it out there for the listenership, and gosh, Curtis, sounds like you got some good results from your excellent review of that phone, you and Karen's. It's interesting, isn't it, how you can put something out there and you don't hear anything about it for a week or two. I guess that's the nature of a podcast, but you know, it'll stay out there for you know, probably from now on. At some point it'll probably have to go into an archive section. But if you or anyone has information for Liz that you'd like to share there, please let us know. And let's skip right over to the voicemail.
Inbox Outlook Express, studio recorder document.
Hi Larry, it's Mike Buzzboom in Vienna, Austria. A couple of things. Firstly, I will be happy to continue my discussion of public transportation here in Europe. Somebody had, from Atlanta had requested more information, and I'd be happy to do more. I'd planned on doing that anyway because of the. I've gotten a lot of questions and feedback. The second thing is, as far as mystery sound number four, it sounds to me like a train, a large train that's braking. Well, it sounds like a lot of the passenger trains I hear over here in Europe that when they're braking, or sometimes you get that sound when they are going around a curve. So it sounds to me like a train coming to a stop, or at least initially applying the brakes, or going around a curve or a bend. Take care and all the best. Bye.
You got it, Mike. That's exactly what it was. Good catch. I'm surprised we didn't have a few more people that got that, but excellent. Glad you were able to identify that. And thank you for providing that fantastic sound-seeing tour of the Vienna Public Transit System. And we all look forward, I'm sure, to hearing some more about transportation and life in Europe. And now that we have an official winner of the grand prize for Mystery Sound number 4, let's play Mystery Sound number 5, sent in by Debbie Norling. Here it is. All right, you want to hear it again? So if you know what that sound is, call our comment line at 206-984-9203.
Larry, a while back you were looking for the way to change or eliminate the Control-Shift-F in WindowEyes so that you could use that keystroke combination for the fast-forward in Windows Media Player. You'll find the Control-Shift-F key under the in the Windows hotkeys under Mouse, under Search. I know you look for Find and you can't find it there, but it's under Search. And if you eliminate that hotkey, which I don't see any reason for in that particular application, you can make it go back and forth to fast forward all you like. Take care. This is Alan Madison in Rio Rancho.
Okay, Alan, thank you very much for the information. Actually, Bill Ballou had provided that already, and I was commenting that Mouse is not the place I would have first guessed to find that, but I'm sure there's some logic there that I'm missing out on.
Hello, this is Mary Emerson from California. Just wanted to thank you for Blind Cool Tech. I'm way behind on it. I just finished number 101, but I'm trying to catch up. I really appreciated the Vienna tour and the Vienna Transit tour, I guess is what it is. It was so good, I made audio CDs for a couple of friends of mine who just love it. I can only hear on one side, but I do have mono switches on my stereo equipment, so at least I can hear everything, even though it's all out of one ear. But I would imagine the stereo on that is absolutely wonderful. That's some of the feedback that I've gotten from some people who have heard it. So thank you for featuring that, and I'm sure that things like that are going to be incredibly enjoyable for people and for all of us to hear, because some of us are just not going to be able to travel to those different places. I love the idea of careers and discussions about careers and such. I have just gone on pre-retirement leave from IBM starting August the 1st, and it essentially amounts to the fact that I don't have an income, but I am kind of technically still employed. I get benefits and all that, and I get full pension credit until I actually retire in about a year and a half after my 30th anniversary. So I can tell you that retirement is a wonderful adjustment, and it's a lot slower than the rat race. I'm pretty burned out with the rat race, though, so I am really enjoying the slower pace. I'll tell you what, never going back to it. No way. But for those of you who still have the energy and can keep up with it all, then more power to you. But Anyway, retirement is certainly an adjustment, but I don't regret it for a second. So that's kind of on the other side of the career thing, I guess. But anyway, I certainly enjoy the podcast. Keep up the terrific work, and I love all these different walks to work that you're taking and all the experiences and the train and all that. Better you than me. I'm glad I'm not doing that anymore. But anyway, take care, and thanks a lot.
Well, Mary, you don't have to do it. You can walk to work with me. And, gosh, you know, I love the idea of doing a career segment, too, and I think you probably would be a perfect one to send us some information about your career at IBM. You know, how you got started with it, what you do there, or what you did there, and maybe even some more about retirement and typical days and challenges, accommodations, just a wide variety of aspects of that that could be really interesting for us. I talked to a few people while I was in Dallas, in fact, about doing something like that, so we may have some interest. If I don't get a submission in the next week or so, I'll go ahead and kick one off with my career, even though you guys probably know more about me than you really care to, but maybe just set it up as kind of a model. Not necessarily that it would be a right or a wrong way to do it, but just a way to do it. So thank you for the feedback, Mary, and excellent point about the way we can experience things that we're not able to actually go to. So Mike did an excellent job on that Vienna public transit soundseeing tour, and I hope we can get some more of those from some more people that are in what we would call exotic locations.
Hi, Larry. It's Edward Alonzo, and I just had a quick question for you. Thought you might know the answer to this. As I'm getting my second podcast ready, I've gone through the steps of uploading it to archive.org and just kind of skipped out on my R-Media at this time. And just went ahead and uploaded it straight to Archive. Excuse me. And I was wondering if you knew about how long it would take to get the link to put on the site for people to download. Like, I'm using LiveJournal for mine. So, to put the link for to get the RSS enclosures and everything like that. Because it seems with our media, when you do it that way, and that's over the web, of course, it's a lot quicker. It instantly, within the hour or so, gets up there. But I did notice that it said if your file was more than 10 megs, you needed to use one of their little tools. And I'd heard you mention that, but I don't know how much more success you end up having with it. So I just thought it'd be simpler to just upload the file, or the directory, rather. I just created a directory on one of my hard drives and just uploaded that in its own directory, so I didn't have to worry about creating a directory on the side and going through that. I just sent the folder and it had the one file name in it to the audio-uploads at .archive.org. And so I was wondering how you know when either the human curator or the automated one or whatever puts it to the download server. I guess maybe you log back into Archive and check it out, or do you notice a difference in speed as far as using Archive?
Oh man,
and not our media, which then sends it to Archive, or what's your opinion on that? So just let me know, and I'll be getting in touch with you when I talk to you. Thanks, and have a great day.
Yeah, I don't recommend using the straight FTP archive.org upload, which is a shame because, it would be so much easier to set that up so that you could do it through a batch file, but I've had it take 3 days for them to clear audio uploads. I think What that's mainly for is if you want to do a large batch of them at once, which is what I ended up doing with, you know, a lot of the old shows for this. But what you, the real way, and yeah, to answer your question, you have to keep logging back on and following the process, and then once they've got it approved, they'll provide you the URL where it can be downloaded. But the real way, instead of using the website, is to download the Our Media Publisher tool, which is quite accessible. Let me just show you how it works.
Desktop. Our Media Publisher 33 of 38.
So I've got an icon on my desktop called Our Media, and I press Enter to open it.
Our Media Publisher. Next. Button.
And there's a couple screens in the beginning.
Our Media Publisher. Welcome to Our Media Publisher. This drag-and-drop tool will upload your digital files into Our Media. You may also publish directly from the Our Media website. Our Media Publisher has 6 easy steps: log and drag, and drop your file or files, choose your copyright license, add the main descriptive information, add additional details, get the URL where you can see your file, click next to begin. How does this work? Button previous, button disabled.
So, when they say drag and drop, you don't actually literally have to drag and drop. So the next screen is your logon screen, and it retains your information if you want it to. So
edit box, save username and password, checkbox checked.
And which I have that checked, so you just tab to next.
Previous, next.
Or you
button.
Could hit Alt N too, I think. Now this screen is where you specify the file that you want to upload. And if you tab,
browse.
There's
button.
A browse button.
Combo edit box.
And I
file name and desktop.
Space on it, and then if I go to, I can type a folder, and then it's a standard open.
BCT 113 CAST interview.mp3 1 of 133.
Now I've actually already uploaded that, but just for demonstrative purposes, we'll go through a little bit more of the process. So I'll hit enter on
media
that.
Media publisher. Browse button.
Puts me back to the browse button. I'll tab.
Delete button. No selected item.
And
list view.
There's a list here, and you down arrow, and it's got the file you highlighted.
BCT 113 CAST interview.mp3 1 of 1. Previous. Next.
Go to
button.
Next. Now this is your screen with your copyright information.
Our media publisher. Choose your license. Please choose the rights assigned to your media files. We recommend choosing a Creative Commons license, which lets you keep your copyright, but allows people to copy and distribute your work provided they give you credit, and only under the conditions you specify here. If you want to offer your work with no conditions, choose the public domain. License class Creative Commons allow commercial uses of your work. Yes, radio button.
So when you decide how you want to make your copyright, you can set all
button.
That up and then
next.
Tab
button.
To next. Now here's where you provide the information about your file.
Edit box. Creator's name.
Creator's name. I really wish it would get this for you automatically, but you would type in your name here.
Combo. Edit box. Copyright holder. Edit box. Copyright year.
And the rest of this information it'll actually obtain from the ID3 tags in the file.
Edit box. Posted by. Edit box. Title of work.
Well, for some reason, you know why it didn't? Because I didn't, I sent the wrong version of this file for this demo, but normally, this Our Media Publisher tool will actually extract the year, the copyright, and the title from your ID3 tags. So you really only have to fill out the uploader. And after this screen, you're pretty much through. You just have to click a couple more, and it will send it on up there. And you download that from the Our Media website. I think if you go to, there's a How to Publish My Media, you can download it right from there. All right, we'll go ahead and get out
Blind
of that.
Blind Cool Tech Podcast, the Verizon LGBX46 Pod. Blind Cool Inbox Outlook Studio Recorder 2.
Yeah.
Larry, this is Jamie Pauls. In listening to your Blind Cool Tech walks to work, I am noticing the sensation of vehicles moving front to back or back to front. And my question is that a purely psychological phenomenon? And if it is not, how is that possible? I mean, obviously the left-to-right stereo field is pretty self-explanatory, but is it possible to hear the other dimension of front-to-back? Just curious on your thoughts about that. Thanks a lot. Enjoy the shows.
Well, thank you, Jamie. I don't think it's possible. I know what you mean, though. You can hear the front-to-back and the back-to-front, but I'm not sure that you can actually tell which is which. It'd be interesting to do some experiments with that, and maybe on one of the walks in the morning I'll identify a car as it's coming toward us and let you guys guess whether it's coming from front-to-back or back-to-front. And obviously you can tell it's coming from one way or the other, primarily due, I suspect, to the, you know, the lower volume and the increasing volume as it gets closer and then as it moves further on out. I really would, I really doubt that you're going to be able to tell whether it's coming from front to back or back to front from just listening to it, because, I mean, there's no way. We've just got two microphones here, and, you know, they're providing the information on the left and the right, not on the front to back. Now, I suppose if a person cocked their head at a 45 degree angle to the oncoming traffic so that you had some left to right and the volume, you know, you'd probably be able to tell. But you're right, you definitely get that impression. It's just that I'm not sure that it's really accurate about which way you're, you know, what you're perceiving. So I will try that on one of the walks next week, and we'll see. You know, in fact, I've listened to some of them and have noted that impression, but I can't really be sure either. I'll make a note though, with one of the cars next week, and we'll see. Neat observation though, and thanks for the feedback, Jamie.
Hello, Larry. Neil Neuer is calling. I want to thank you for the help you gave me on the iRiver. I have spent, this makes me think you should do a podcast on little-known facts about the iRiver. I have spent hours having sighted people read the manual, having people at iRiver walk me through menu items, trying to get my external microphone to work. And they say, oh, you just go in here in this menu and you check in external microphone. And I keep saying, it's already checked. Well, you know, all I had to do was call up Larry, and he said, you know what? It isn't that the iRiver just has three modes, MP3, FM tuner, and voice mode. If you arrow down one more time, which I should have done, you get to external mic, for goodness sakes. Now, why couldn't anybody at iRiver have told me that? Huh. You know, you talk to a blind guy, and he has all the answers. Thanks for all your help, and thanks for doing all kinds of interesting testing of recorders. This is something I've been doing for a long time. There's actually another one out, by the way, or coming out tomorrow. I talked to sound specialists, who I think you got your binaural mics from, and they told me about another one, I can't remember the name of it, that's coming out tomorrow, that's supposed to be very tiny. I know you have mentioned the, I think it's the Edirol, I can't remember if that's the right name, but this is actually a newer model, newer recorder than that, so you might want to check it out. But anyway, thanks for all your podcasts on sound and everything else, and thanks for your help, and do give us all kinds of neat tips and tricks about all these recorders when you find them, because, you know, people who see just sometimes aren't looking very well. That's nothing against people who see, but, you know, it's people like us who have to remember all this stuff once we get it in our head. If we didn't have to get all this stuff in our head and keep it around, we'd have room for people's names that I always forget. Anyway, take care. Thanks a lot. Bye.
There you go, Neil. Yeah, you know, you've I know you've done a lot of work with sound and recordings, and we really look forward to hearing some submissions from you and spreading the good information. You know, and actually I knew exactly what was going on when you wrote me that email. I think I just wrote back to Neil and said, you know, make sure you're all the way down on that fourth mode, because, you know, if you've got it set and you're not hearing the feedback through the earphones, that's most likely what it is. So glad we were able to get that straightened out.
This is Mary Emerson again with an answer for the individual who had a question about MS Config. I've used it a number of times, and the way they've got it set up is rather confusing. What you have to do is when you reboot your computer and you get that dialog where it says that it's in selective mode, you have to choose no. The default is yes, which says you want to set everything back to the way that you had it previously, which is not what you want to do. What you want to do is keep the stuff that you turned off or on, and you want to maintain that permanently. And I believe it's the no option that says keep it in selective mode, but do not bring up this box every time the PC boots. Okay? I'm not sure if that's all included in the no function, but there should at least be a way to tell it not to bring up that dialog every time the PC boots. But you want it in selective mode whenever you reboot, so that it'll turn off the stuff you turned off, turn down the stuff that you turned on, so you have some control over it. I hope that confirms everything. There are some third-party programs that will let you not only turn on and off certain things, but actually let you delete some of these things out of the startup part of the registry. And you don't have to get into the registry to do it. These programs will just let you get rid of things or keep things, whatever. Startup Cop was one, but I never had any luck with it. There's another one that I use that I can't remember the name of, and I think I had to buy it, but it probably cost only about $5 or $10. But anyway, that's the deal with MS Config. I hope this helps.
Thanks, Mary. I love getting these answers to user questions like this. Really appreciate you taking the time to give us a little bit of your expertise.
Hey, Larry, this is Kurt Tucker in Huntsville, Alabama. I want to say I've enjoyed your show, and I enjoyed the review of the iRiver 899, and I've heard that those are hard to locate now, and I was wondering what you think of the replacement iRiver, the new models. I don't have a recorder, but I'm planning on getting one soon. And enjoy your program, and keep up the good work. Bye.
Hey, Kurt. Yeah, there's an iRiver T10 and a T30, I believe, and I have not had my hands on those yet. I've heard some rumors that they were pretty bad to use, but I really prefer to check them out for myself before I dismiss them out of hand. So hopefully one of our listeners or maybe one of the people I know around here will get one of those in the near future, and we'll try to take a good hard look at that thing. That's going to do it for this edition of Blind Cool Tech. If you would like to contact us, our comment line is at 206-984-9203. Our email address is blindcooltech@gmail.com, and we're on the web at blindcooltech.com. If you would like to make an audio submission, there's actually a few ways to do it. Mike Busboom sent his via youvesendit.com, which seems like a pretty cool service that allows you to send an email to a person that contains a link, and they store the file, apparently just temporarily, on their server. And once the person who receives the email downloads the file, they recover the space. So that's an option. We also have an official option set up for you with an FTP address. And that address is ftp://bct, like Blind Cool Tech, @skular.onlinestoragesolution.com. You'll need to log in with a user ID and password. The user ID will be BCT and the password will be submit. This has been episode 114 of Blind Cool Tech. Y'all have a great one. I'm Larry Skutkan, and we will see you next time.